that, do you want to know what the Marvel Movie News fans thought of Wonder Woman? Do you want to know what DC Movie News thinks of Runaways? Do you want to talk about all things comic? This is a very comic movie and TV show holiday special spectacular!
Welcome to Popcorn Talk, featuring movie discussion, news, and interviews. Popcorn Talk, we talk movies.
Oh, jingle bells, Batman smells, Robin lay-lay-lay. The Batmobile lost its wheel, Joker got away.
Yes! Holiday nerd out!
It is the holidays.
Holiday nerd out!
Holiday!
You know, nothing says the holidays like geeking out, family, and sharing what you love. And so, I would like to welcome you to a very comic book and movie TV show holiday special spectacular where we freak about how awesome it is to love comics and all adaptations from all over the world in 2017. We are coming to you live from the Amalgam Universe, gathering together to talk about everything from both houses of ideas. Welcome, I am Corey Jandro at C-O-Y-J-A-N-D-R-E. I can't remember my name. Joined by Markeia McCarty
at M-A-R-K-E-I-A-M-C-C-A-R-T-Y.
And
Roxy Strikes!
You know how to spell her name, and
whatever.
Adam Gertler at Adam Gertler all the time, anytime.
Now, all the time.
That all that zeal was brought to you by the fact that we've been gearing up for half an hour. We are holidayed up. We got cookies. We got eggnog-like substances. We got
amazing peanut butter cookies.
And the best thing was, though we were late, we were celebrating how much each of us wanted to talk about the other's properties we don't get to on our respective shows.
I also don't know if you can call it late, considering they didn't know this was even happening. So bonus for you guys.
Extra content. We're early to nothing and something. So I wanted to thank you guys for joining us. I want you to watch this through the holidays. I want you to show your family what kind of weird stuff you're into. And most importantly, for me, this is about showing that there is no, like, separation in comics. We are all comic fans. We can like everything together. So, in honor of the holidays, we're going to rock some Christmas story-type goodness, and we're going to do Ghosts of Christmas Past, Ghosts of Christmas Present, and Ghosts of Christmas Future when it comes to comic books, and all the Scrooges slash trolls on the internet can learn that we can all love everything. And that is my goal of this show. I really think that, everything is good to watch together, guys. So, we're going to start with the Ghosts of Comicsmas Past. And we're going to start with DC movies. So, DC movies...
We have a lot of ghosts.
This year...
You're going to start with the one good thing we got?
No, you guys...
You're going to start with that one good? That's it?
We're
going
to start two good. You guys got two good movies this year.
Yeah, they're excellent.
Now, two good movies this year were... We got Lego Batman.
Yes!
And we got Wonder Woman.
Yes, we did.
Now, I'd like you guys to tell us what you guys thought. That was this year. How crazy is that?
That's wild. That is wild. Wonder Woman feels like a different lifetime ago. It feels like so long ago.
Pre and post WWE.
Yet, what I will say is that people are still talking about it, which shows the impact this truly had. I was expecting this to do better during award season. Like Globes, really surprised with Patty not getting nominated, with the film not getting nominated, with Gal not getting nominated. I feel like that's right up their alley.
Yeah, I agree.
But this movie was amazing, and it finally gave us something to talk about on our show. You guys have no idea how it feels. They don't know.
I loved Wonder Woman. It was a paradigm shift of what you can expect from a superhero movie because of the vulnerability, because of her innocence, and because of No Man's Land. Oh, my Lord. That is probably one of my absolute favorite moments of
all of comic movies.
And in all of comic movies.
Definitely the highlight of the film. I think, you know, it's interesting. 2017 is going to go down as a year. It's like we almost had so much goodness. We can't even process it all yet. I mean, there were so many. I don't think too many of these comic book films shit the bed this year. Like, there was so much goodness this year. Obviously, Wonder Woman, for not just being a really well-done film, but the timing, the paradigm shift, you know, everything that's happened with the collapse of the evil patriarchy that runs the world.
Starting with
Daisy and Star Wars. And, like, because these things are not just, like, good for a female character and I'll see it, but, like, universally everybody's just about these characters in a way that is outside of sexuality. And the cultural significance of Wonder Woman, you know, maybe rightly so, has superseded its, you know, quality. It's a touchstone of a film. You know what I mean?
And
it's a watershed moment.
We have so many properties. We're going to talk about present. We're going to talk about future. We have so many properties every year. We have so many properties from Marvel in the past. I think the best relationship in any comic movie to date is Wonder Woman and Steve Trevor. I think
I love
the relationship, and that's, I'm counting New Line, I'm counting Fox, I'm saying everything. I think that's the best relationship, and I think that's because they trusted the audience to believe an actual relationship could take place in a sword and sandals superhero movie.
I'm so sorry for your loss.
Do you
who
disagree?
Would have thought?
No,
Oh, it's over.
I wholeheartedly
I had the notebook happen at me with Wonder Woman.
Yeah, no, but I was saying, like, who would have thought how satisfying it could be to have the romantic interest be a three-dimensional character with their own wants and their own ambitions and goals and morals, and then have that go in line with the lead character. Who could have thunk that?
I know. And then to get such a great... Spoilers, guys, if you haven't seen this stuff, I can't imagine that you're one of, like, 100 people watching us right now, so it seems silly to even say that. But to then get a well-earned sacrifice at the end of that film, you know, where obviously we know Wonder Woman's not going to die, but you're going to, I mean, like, because we were saying before, it's like, oh, well, they're not going to keep her in that time period, so what are they going to do with Chris Pine, and is it just a one and done for him, or are they going to do some stupid cheesy grandson thing or incarnation?
Oh, man.
And who knows, but for right now, it was a great sacrifice in the film. The villain... A lot of people criticize in the film, and it's not great. But what is great is the retelling of the moment, the different perspective, the absence of sound that happens, and then you hear it. Like, it's really emotional, and it, like, after the No Man's Land sequence, which you mentioned, it's like, it finishes on a great note. Like, it sticks a landing.
For me, I think that was one of the few comic deaths that had all the impact it needed to because of the fact that it was in a different period. We theoretically know because of that photo that he stays dead. And to me, that shows that comic movie deaths can have impact. It's not the Coulson experience.
So everybody, like, knock on wood.
Yeah, that's true. Wonder Woman 2 starring Chris Pine. God damn it.
Yeah. Oh, it's like, no, he needed to die.
Did we talk about Batman 2? I mean, Lego Batman as well.
Yeah, Lego Batman's.
Yes.
That was even before. That was in February, right?
Yeah, it was a Valentine's Day movie.
But for some reason, that feels sooner to me than Wonder Woman. Because Wonder Woman's so iconic, I feel like.
Yeah, but Lego Batman, like, really hit it for that family touchstone. I enjoyed the heck out of this. Not only did it pay homage to just the ridiculousness that's Batman. Like, yes, Batman had all of those outfits. Yes, they should all exist in the Batman cave. And I love the continuance of that particular Batman.
Yeah.
What's his name? Will Arnett. Yeah. That particular Batman and to Zach get his
Galifianakis.
Own.
That's
so crazy, right?
So about
and the deep
it.
Cuts, the amount of villains and crazy deep Batman knowledge that movie got to dive into, like, villains we'll never see in movies because they can do it there.
That's what's the best thing about this movie is that it knows Batman better than any Batman has ever known Batman.
Yeah.
And
references.
That's why at least people like myself are so excited that this guy, Chris McKay, would get his hands on any DC property because this guy clearly knows his stuff.
Yeah, and he loves it. He loves it enough to make fun of it in a way that you also laugh with it.
Yeah, because it's right. It's finding that way to laugh at the thing, but not at its own expense. To laugh
laughing
at our history.
With, not at Batman. You're the history with these.
Yeah, what I will say about
BVS,
this,
they made fun of BVS in their own movie. I mean, like
6 months later, like
6 months
later,
yeah.
The paint hadn't dried on BVS yet. They were like, "That's gonna be." Ooh.
The one thing though is that the longevity of this movie, I don't feel like people are still remembering this as the big hit that it was. When we all went to see it, we're like, "Yes, DC, slay, so good. I'm all about it. This movie's funny and it's cool and all the voices."
But do you think that's because the older people liked it and not the younger people?
The audience on the
I
internet.
Felt like I saw
which
it at a
I was
screening.
About to get
okay,
to.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Finish
your
story,
folks. They got ideas together.
We actually talk about this quite frequently together on our show, DC Movie News.
Oh, it's that show?
Yeah, I think that the problem is because it's easy for us to sit around this table and be like, that movie was dope.
Yeah.
I know my sister and her friends were not loving it. They weren't watching it.
I was next
it,
to a 14-year-old
still...
girl, and I felt very uncomfortable with how much I was
laughing.
I was like, those tears were coming out. I lost my shit in a movie, one of the most I laughed in a theater this whole year.
So
and like,
good.
This actual person who is probably the aimed, I don't know, market for this thing, and I'm like 40, and I'm like, oh man, I don't know if this is okay. But I see that's why it had that effect, and they said it didn't, you know, it didn't go up from the Lego, it didn't make as much as the original Lego film.
But the rewatchability of this for me
is so high.
Yes.
It's
so high. I can watch this anytime, anywhere.
Yeah, just the lobster thermidor itself. I'm like, what?
It's only eight. What is lobster thermidor? This rich person did
so
from the 70s.
And all the rich jokes and all the like layers they gave to both Bruce Wayne and Batman that they don't do in the movies, I just... So that was the Ghost of Comicmas Past for DC. Now, the Ghost of Comicmas Past for Marvel, we had Logan, Guardians of the Galaxy 2, and Spider-Man Homecoming this year.
Piss off.
So,
what a sucky three movies.
I'm just
what
saying,
a shit year it was
that,
for you guys.
That Oscar film and that tearjerker and then that reinvention of an iconic character was rough for us. We struggled through.
Yeah, I'm telling you, I don't know how we live.
I just... Now, Logan was the first thing a lot of studios got by way of screeners. Logan is going for the Oscar run. It's actually trying to qualify. I think it deserves at least the best supporting for Stewart.
Yeah, at least for Sir Patrick Stewart.
This is going to be an unpopular opinion, but Logan was not my favorite of the Marvel films. I really enjoyed it. I thought it was good. My problem is usually I see these movies on the earlier side when the critics are watching them, and I watched this later. It was still opening weekend, but all of my friends, all of you guys had already seen it. Everybody was like, this is the best movie that ever was. I'll cry the whole time. And I went, and expectations were so high, and it didn't live up to the hype for me. I still really, really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But I didn't think, like, wow, that tore apart my soul. Or, wow, yeah, I'm devastated. I was like, oh, that was a good one.
Overhype can be a hell of a thing.
Yeah, you know? And it really was.
For me, it was like, it was set in this, like, pitch-perfect dystopia world. Mm-hmm. And not only that, but you get to see Paul Xavier. I did not.
Paul Xavier.
Charles is an alternate universe cousin.
Professor
there's
Xavier.
Kane Marco. There's Charles.
Professor Xavier and Wolverine, and you have them near the end of, well, their epic art, and you really get how their lives are impossible. Yeah. It is impossible to
and
live
X-23, the way that they live. And X-23, we need to give some credit to introducing a character that I didn't think would translate to film Daphne as well Keen, as she did.
Yeah. Daphne Keen.
That character.
And heartbreaking moments in this film.
I thought for the first 6 months, though, that her name was Ecstasy. I thought it was very bizarre, and it was revealed to me that it was X-23, and I was like, yeah, I need to be looking
I'm
closer
go
at
read
this
these
story.
Comics, because
yeah,
that makes a little more sense.
Yeah,
so that's fine. She was taught by Paul Xavier, so.
Exactly. She was at Paul's school for the gifted.
The ecstasy learning.
He runs the school in Mexico.
Well, there is the stripper storyline in X-23. Do you guys know that? There's the first time she was introduced to the comic before they kind of retconned it. There was a prostitute storyline in New York that was this young adult, and it was wicked dark because it was basically leaning into the fact that her healing factor would be used nefariously and awfully. And it's this awful,
ooh,
like,
she could never get pregnant sort of thing. Never, or?
Like, it was, you yeah. can take, do whatever to X-23. It's gross. Yeah.
It's pretty
but,
gross.
But the anime, like,
pretty
the,
dark.
The illustrations are gorgeous. It's got that really heavy hand, like Marvel Max.
What book
flavor.
Was that in?
I think it was called X-23. I'll look it up. It was early in her career.
So I have a pretty,
chat room, if you know, hook us up.
I have a very unique.
Oh, NYX. It was called NYX.
Okay.
NYX, straight up.
On Logan, I you know, this is one of the ones, one of the coolest things I got to do for my other job, which is the FX movie download thing. I get to do some pre-press interviews sometimes with the Fox Studios, right? 20th Century Fox. So I got to go to the press screening for Logan in New York, and then I got to sit down with James Mangold, Boyd Holbrook, Patrick Stewart, and Hugh Jackman and do a little interview. And, like, I saw the movie before I talked to them, and I was like, I knew it was going to be good. And it was like, it was the third movie. None of us liked the first one. The second one was like half better. Like, the beginning of the second one is note perfect. And some of the stuff in Japan I love.
Third
I love the looks.
It was like
garbage. Garbage, just like garbage for garbage sake. It was as bad as Wolverine Origins again, which is why it's so Mangold comes back on from the beginning of this film. Hugh Jackman has the clout to say, this is going to be my last one. We have to do it this way. Deadpool allows it to happen,
yep.
Clears the path, said there's money to be made here. And they make this, and this is the other side to Fox being all over the place with continuity, is that you could do these
one-off
kind of films.
And you don't have to ground anymore. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter who they were, what film counts, or because it's off in the future,
just
and it's
like
off
comics,
to the side.
Like annuals and one-offs,
yes,
and miniseries.
Yes, comics are always doing this to us.
It's true.
But when Patrick Stewart and Hugh Jackman are relating and about the past, and when I found you, and that was very much Bryan Singer's X-Men 1, X-Men, you know, it matters to us. The plot of the film is stupid. There's the ending is ridiculous. The fact that he fights his younger self, you know, I wish there was some better way, but the villains suck. But the relationship of Patrick Stewart and Hugh Jackman and Wolverine himself and the violence and the look of the film make it my favorite probably comic book film of the year, I would say.
For me, the fight choreography meets the brutality they trusted the character to have. The fact
the
that
girl,
Logan,
when the girl comes out with the head?
Geez. And Logan,
what?
Logan talked, acted, and moved like Logan, because Hugh Jackman's always been able to play Wolverine, and I feel like with this R-rated, he was able to play Logan. I feel like we got James Howlett all the way, and I also feel like this was the movie that sets the new bar for what R-rated movies can be. As much as I love Deadpool, we now have a comedy R, and we have a violent R, and that's what movies can be if they trust us.
And I actually like the dichotomy. I have no words. I like the dichotomy of having the cloned younger Wolverine come in.
Inner self.
Just oh, God, yes. I mean, talk about having, like, the id just burst out of the screen and, like, hit you in the face and, like, you know, and kill your mentor at the same time.
Yeah, no, I mean, listen, I don't hate it. I don't hate it, but...
I'm saying what I like.
You said it was your favorite comic book movie of the year.
No, it was. Yeah. And the Ernie Hudson, like, all that. Yeah, I mean, like, the family thing. Like, there are so many great scenes. So, no, well, I'm just saying it's like... Yes, I see, you know, you could come out in both ways. It's kind of like a wash. I see both points of view on him fighting himself.
All about child mutants, too. Like, I love the idea of this army, and I love any time it's not the adults. You see the affliction really in the children. And that's where it's like, wow, imagine if that was your actual life. Would it really even be cool?
It's an impossible life.
Yeah. I really like that it trusted itself to be a movie, not a comic movie. It was a movie first, comic movie second. Yeah. And I also, like, you can watch this movie in black and white. The black and white cut's gorgeous. There's not another comic movie I can think of where you're like, that's a classic film. Like, you can't, like, dive back into it in the same way.
Do you think Patrick Stewart will get any nominations? He didn't get a Globe, right?
Hope
or did he?
I hope so.
Did Logan get anything? No. Did he get nothing?
Yes, that's not a good sign. But.
So what?
Not really. It's not a sign of anything.
It really
is. The Globes this year.
Right.
They missed the ball on this, like, big time.
I thought Patrick Stewart was just amazing.
He was.
I mean, it was my favorite thing.
Now, speaking of crying, I personally cried in both Logan and Guardians Volume 2. Spoilers from 6 months ago, Yondu, that was such a powerful moment I didn't expect to feel so strongly about.
He died in Star-Lord's arms.
In space. And, like, it was the most cosmic death. It felt like the cover of a comic. And, like, we had the Mary Poppins y'all line, which is now pop culture, like, lexicon. Like,
it's cosplay now.
Like, yeah, it's a lot. And the movie had, I think people expected something because of Guardians 1, so people don't talk about it as much. Because Guardians 1 rewrote what Marvel is. Like, Thor Ragnarok exists because of Guardians 1.
But that's not fair, because everybody's forgetting about Guardians 2 or not talking about it. And it's like, this movie was amazing.
It was an amazing
movie. I thought it was just as good as Guardians 1, and I know that's not popular opinion either. But
it's in my top 7 Marvel movies, in my top half.
I love it. I love this film. And for people to be like, but it's not Guardians 1... Well, actually, that is true.
That's the end of the movie.
Yeah. However, it is really good. Now, did it reinvent the wheel the way that Guardians 1 did? No, because Guardians 1 had already done that.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But I thought it was so strong and funny and poignant. I'm all
in
on this.
It started so well when you have, like, Groot, and then everything's happening in the background.
Baby Groot makes me tear up. Just like
I think this is a movie that will age well, because we're talking about it's Ghost of Christmas Past, but it's this year, and I think that, like, I got it on Blu-ray, but my initial reaction was I didn't love it as much either. And then I rewatch it. It gets better every time I rewatch it. And I think it's just going to age great. I think you're absolutely right about, like, it created its new thing. And it's like, oh, here's another episode in a great show that you love.
Yeah.
It's not a whole new thing. And, like, it's going to be like that with Deadpool 2, 100%. Right? Not to get into the future, because that's a different ghost.
And I know this is a personal thing, but as somebody with a sister, I love sister stuff.
Yep.
So I always love watching that. And I thought it was really cool.
And I like that he played with mirroring old movies, like with the North by Northwest with that scene.
Yes.
I love that he played with tropes in movies. I love that it felt like it was already so weird that we dove into the emotionality of these characters while in space. Like, this was a cosmic space opera again, and we're still just as invested that we cry when Yondu dies.
How,
like,
did you feel about Mantis?
I love Mantis. Yeah. I know a lot of people said it wasn't true to how the actual characters, but I don't have a strong connection. I know I've seen Mantis in comics, but I thought that a lot of times with this MCU, they've made characters better than I've liked them in the comics.
Right? Corgan Meeks. We're getting there.
Captain America more in the films than I did in the books. I love Chris Evans as Captain America more than I've read Captain America.
I don't
think
that's wrong necessarily. Punisher, by far.
Yeah. 100%.
But also in the Infinity War trailer.
We'll get there.
She's when I saw Mantis in the Infinity War trailer. That told me how I felt about her, and I liked her. I was really happy to see her there, and I thought she was funny, and, like, I love that she what the things she's doing.
And unique.
You feel a deep romantic love for her.
And it was a James Gunn movie through and through, so I like that it showed that Marvel trusted a director to go full crazy, and then we learned that with a Christmas Present movie as well. But I really appreciated that James Gunn was able to put, like, his friends in it, like Jimmy Urine from Mindless Self-Indulgence in that movie's a lead, and I love that the weird music stayed, and it didn't feel like they did well in the first one, so the studio got involved. They let him make another weird, crazy movie that we loved. So
it feel like he has the most romantic relationship with Kevin Feige, James Gunn does, because James Gunn is this wonderfully outspoken, awesome guy on Twitter. Like, he talks a lot. and he's amazing. And I think he's got the trust. It's just interesting to see how, like, yeah, like some, you know, like Edgar Wright maybe didn't want to be part of the system.
Yeah.
It's a system that Kevin Feige's a part of. The Russo brothers said, like, we can do it because of this guy. Like, not everybody can play in that team. Joss Whedon didn't want to play in that system.
Yeah.
But it's a system that really works for these directors that were just very creative, and he's just like, hey, what if I'm going to just give you all this backing and everything? We're going to make these really weird films, but they're still going to hit these marks. And it's such a unique relationship that goes on between Kevin Feige and his directors.
And everyone. And speaking of the system and it working, Spider-Man has joined the system. Now, this year is our first Marvel-produced or co-produced Spider-Man film. We finally have Spider-Man in the Avengers. We finally have Spider-Man in the universe. And it was in a way that was actually young. This wasn't a 25-year-old looking guy playing a high school kid. This was a kid playing a kid. And I think it was one of our most authentic portrayals of an iconic character. I think Spider-Man is hard to get right because everyone has a Spider-Man. Like, he's my favorite guy next to Deadpool. I know what I think of when I see Spider-Man. Tom Holland was that for me.
It's hard for me because I never feel like they've gotten it wrong. Ever.
Right.
Like, okay. Which is wild because I love Amazing positive. Spider-Man 2.
Amazing Spider-Man 2 apologist here, Roxy Stryer.
I'm an Amazing 1 apologist.
So I've never watched a Spider-Man film and been like, butchered that. I love, anytime I see him, he's just so fun and cool.
Yeah.
Like, awesome. What are you doing? You're a nerdy little, I just love him. So I felt fun. Like this was another excellent Spider-Man movie.
I love that point of view.
Yeah.
I think, because I try to stay very positive, like, with my Marvel, but I'm also a rabbit fan. Mm-hmm. So I've had some things to say with, like, past Spider-Man, like Spider-Man, what was it, Spider-Man 3, with the whole dance sequence
thing. We don't talk about Venom.
Well, no, yeah, that particular Venom, but I love Spider-Man.
That makes me so happy you enjoyed that.
Yeah, it's like, hey, Spider-Man, this Spider-Man, two great tastes great together, you know?
You know, even Spider-Man 3, I'll defend that Sandman
sequence.
Sandman is one of the greatest sequences I've ever seen.
I'll defend a third of Spider-Man 3. Absolutely. Yeah. I'll defend an entire arc of Spider-Man 3. But for me, Spider-Man is the most underdog. He's the guy that every kid identifies with, right? Like, you're like, Spider-Man's my guy. And a lot of people get so defensive because of that. I think the reason we're able to have three very different Spider-Men is because everyone sees a bit of themselves in each of them, and every one of them is a piece of themselves and a piece of Spider-Man. Like, Tobey Maguire was very much the squirrely Back to the Future nerd. Andrew Garfield was like a little more punk and a little more like jokester. They had Tommy write him. And Tom Holland, to me, is the everyday New York kid that just is trying to get by, but he's also hilarious. I think
what's also great about that, the one they're doing now, is like they're putting it in the now. They're making it of the ethos of now. Like, again, that's what's so great about Feige and his team. He's like, all right, but what would it be like now? Like, we can't just do it in the 60s. And like, Raimi's films had that flavor, that out of time, in the same way that like Elfman's first Batman film felt out of a time. You know? But this one feels in this world, in this MCU, and there's things like, with great power comes great responsibility, was never uttered in this film, but it was said between them in Civil War without saying it.
We know it.
So, and how excellent is it that Civil War, we had like this little bit of Spider-Man, and that then sparked this trilogy.
Crazy
times.
Had
this little bit of Black Panther.
I think that you guys did what I really was hoping that Flash would be for us, but didn't end up being, in my opinion. And I know we're not talking about Justice League yet, but I have my qualms with the Barry Allen character in the film.
Yeah.
I wish that we had our Peter Parker. I wish we had our Spidey to the Justice League like you guys have.
We have our Avengers.
Because he's such a different component, and it's so necessary and fresh, and I want that for the DC also. Even if we had to copy it. Even if we had to be like,
what if we got a Tom Holland kind of guy?
Yeah, like, literally, I wouldn't even mind that, because I think that smart people borrow ideas that work. Because
that's how you build. And then you can branch off after. You get a foundation, you move through.
That's what I do.
I think what they did with the Vulture.
I'm smart, right?
The Vulture built off of Green Goblin. Like, they did a great job making the Vulture a Green Goblin parallel without reusing a goblin for the third franchise. We've had goblins in all of them. Ooh. The scene with them in the car and the scene with him, like, when they're in the car and he reveals himself to be.
Oh my God.
That is Michael Keaton and Tom Holland just acting their eyeballs out, and you see an entire comic art play in a car.
I really enjoyed that moment, because talk about peak awkwardness for being a teenage superhero. Where it's like, this is your villain, but this is also your date's dad, and all of that unfolds.
And Keaton wearing the jacket in that warehouse across the room, overpowering a teenage boy by talking at him. Like, in the wide shot where he's like waiting for the vulture or goblin thing to come around, that was peak Spider-Man.
I kind of rooted for him at some point.
It's amazing, right?
Yeah, you got it.
I was like, yeah, man. I did what you're doing.
That prologue scene was so good. I love, my favorite Michael Keaton line of the whole film was like in the opening scene when he's like, what did you just say to me? It was just like, oh, it's there. I see where this guy, Keaton, it doesn't matter who he is. Like, I could see that. It was like, but at the same time, it was classic Keaton, which we haven't seen since his resurgence. Mm-hmm. And it was like, I got that this guy would just be set off by the wrong person.
It was also, and the last bit I want to touch on, is probably the best world building we've had as far as multiple villains and storylines going from there. Because we had two Shockers, we had a Vulture, we've got Prowler set up, we've got Miles Morales set up, we've got so much future building, we got Liz Allen, we've got the idea of MJ, we've got Gwen Stacy coming to the next one. There's so much.
I don't know if I'm giving you that one. The other ones I'll give you.
But the idea that they put in that many villains and that many characters and it never felt like Tony Revolta is a brand new Flash. Like, that is insane to put in one movie, and we did it right. So I think world-building, Spider-Man gets my world-building stamp. So DC TV, Christmas past. DC runs the TV game. I want to give full credit to DC.
Yeah, we have for a while. That's been our value.
Yes. I want to say
I
love these shows. Oh my God.
You know, we do a show called DC Movie News, which was born the same week as your show.
This is my theme song.
One of our most popular segments is just a TV segment because thanks to Rocky Show's TV time.
I am obsessed. I'm so glad that he included you guys in the theme song, that now you're part of it, the official theme.
Adam's
that.
Cooking so divine. It's so really divine. Touching.
Yep. Yeah, it's good.
What happens with Johnny? The girls think he's fine?
Yeah.
Also, Johnny and Mike wanted to be here. They both have separate obligations. They both say hi. They're not excluded on purpose. Hi to Mike and Johnny. They are loved.
Yes. And as you know, I do a show with Johnny.
The live check, so I'm very concerned.
Do?
Yeah, I do a WWE Raw after show with Johnny.
Wow.
For the last year and a half, give or take every Monday.
Live chat, we're not saying that Marvel shows aren't catching up. We're saying that in the past, we're still in Christmas past.
Guys.
Historically, DC has been doing great with TV. I want to give them credit. So
for those that are just joining us now, we have this show like cut up into different segments. And right now we're talking about Ghosts of Christmas Past.
Because it's a Christmas.
That's earlier this year of things, and then we're going to be talking about present, and then we're going to be talking about future. So we are covering more.
All the haters out there were humbugging. So I want to first start with Preacher, which is one of my favorite shows of the year.
It's such a good translation or adaptation from the comic book.
James
I've done Gilgun. The comic book, and I've. And Ruth Negga, oh my God.
Amazing, yeah.
That's why she's Oscar nominated, my friend.
Oscar nominated Ruth Negga.
Yeah.
Okay, but Preacher,
that show is great. I agree that it's a perfect adaptation because it does not strictly follow the comics, but also it has all of my favorite moments so far. They threw me off season one with where they started, and I was like, where are we going with this?
Mm-hmm.
I still was in mostly because of Cassidy. Just
love. James Gilgun is the show for me.
Oh, I was in for Tulip. I
loved
hardcore
her too,
Tulip.
But Cassidy, I was just like, okay, I'll keep watching because what's he doing?
Every scene he's in, I'm like, what is that guy doing?
The Dennis thing wasn't from the comics.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it's just like Spider-Man Homecoming, like making this classic story like in the now.
But the road trip and the going home and the coffin and all that stuff, like all those moments that we need.
And setting it in New Mexico, modern, but feeling like an old Western is amazing.
Yes. And season two knocked season one out of the water? Park?
Park. Knocked it.
Is it the water or the park?
Well, they're in the bayou. They're in New Orleans. So.
Knocked it out of the bayou.
No, because it knocked that out of it wasn't it didn't go out of the park it knocked season one out of the running
the New Mexico
it was better than season one.
Don't get bogged down in your metaphor, Roxy. I hear what you're saying. They stepped up their game in season two. They got crazy. Uh-huh. And when you're considering the best comic book villains of 2017 across all media, I would like to submit Hair Star as one of the best translations.
Absolutely.
For the win.
And my girlfriend just pointed out that dude was in Force Awakens when we were seeing the double feature the other day. She's like, oh, the guy from Preacher. I'm like, oh, good eye.
Great eye.
Go, girl.
Yeah.
You must have felt so proud of that.
I think he's First Order, I want to say. It was that was amazing.
Preacher is just like it's everything that I wanted it to be, and then things that I didn't realize that I needed for it to be. And like with season two, it definitely brings that when you have like this basically unstoppable bad guy that he does stop but has to do it through such a sacrifice. I'm not giving anyone even 1% of my soul. That's not happening. I don't care who I'm.
No percentage.
None.
Take my fingernails.
And that was also not from the comics, I believe, right?
No, that was.
trusted them to go and make this world exist.
It's so crazy.
Where you have like this world and then you couple it together with this science and this mystical side. And I was just like, I am here for this. Preacher, thank you for that.
And a show that we'll talk about in the future, Runaways, I think is doing that really well as well. While we're on the subject of varying, it keeps you excited even if you know the book. And that's what I think is doing really well.
Yeah, that's what you're saying. So that the fans don't... Again, to kind of like touch on what everybody is so butthurt about like Last Jedi, it's like... Everybody has an expectation, but if you got your expectation, you can't be satisfied with that.
While we're briefly on Star Wars,
that's not how stories work.
The theme of the movie being the problem everyone has is the most brilliant meta thing I've ever lived through. The fact that it's about killing your heroes because they're overhyped and everyone is trying to kill that movie because they're like, that is beautiful.
And that's not saying anything about spoilers like that. In the title, it says The Last Jedi, so then that
says zero spoilers. But I'm just saying
that film. I don't care what
it
says.
I love
it.
Suck
it.
I don't know how I feel about Porgs, though. I'm still on the fence.
Oh my God. Are we all pro Last Jedi people?
Yes! I love pork.
My favorite
thing on them. I'm on the fence. I don't know if I want to hug them or strangle them.
We just lost half the chat room, just so you know.
Yep. Sorry, I'm on the fence about
it's porks. Technically a Marvel property,
it is,
right? Marvel
Disney.
Makes the comics. We make the connection.
Yeah, feel free to convince me about porgs.
So we are going to move on to iZombie, which is another Christmas past.
This is the most underrated show on television.
I know.
It's excellent.
One of these days, if Adam cares about me enough, he will jump on.
I've never seen it.
it's devastating.
It's so good.
And the thing is, because it's on CW and the rest of our DC TV shows, or a lot of them are on CW, people are like, I don't know if it's got that like high school feel to it. It's so good. And it doesn't have that kind of feel.
It really doesn't.
Rose McIver's unbelievable. The show is just... You never know what you're going to get. Every time I'm like, oh, yep, I have that figured out. And it's fun. And it's just light. And I can watch it any time of day.
Yeah. And it's got that nice balance of dark and comedy that goes with it. And like the characters themselves, they can just stand there and you get where they are coming from. And I forget his name right now, but the mortician, not the mortician.
David Anders.
But his like character name.
Oh, Blaine.
No. The Indian British guy.
Oh, Ravi.
Ravi.
So good.
I'm here for some Ravi. Oh my God, he's just going through his own whole arc of things, and I'm here for that. And
also,
I love
not
the,
hard to look at.
Yeah, not at all. And the sociopolitical ramifications of having zombies in a modern day world. Oh my God.
I've never seen the show. So, like, how does it compare to the tone of the other like DC property CW shows? Like. Tonally,
it's more
is it
adult.
Like, okay.
It's more adult. I feel like it's more relatable for me. Like, I don't feel like it's something that I would watch with, you know, a teenage sister. I don't even have a sister. With, like, you
but
know,
if you had one, you could imagine.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, then it's like those CW shows, sure. And I feel like I could do that with iZombie, but I feel like it's a show for me. Like, I can watch that with my friends, my of age friends, and we have fun with it.
It doesn't take itself that seriously. So, in that way, it's like Flash. But it is mature like Arrow, but not like we're dark and gritty and brooding
and
like Arrow.
It's not campy, except for when it's perfect for it to be
so
campy.
I mean,
the very fact that you could be a zombie and eat somebody's brains and then you take on their personality, their traits, and then also flashbacks of their memories, that's smart.
It's a great setup for procedural. I mean, that really sets you up to like in a quantum leapy kind of way. Like, we know what the formula can be. And I can see how it gives writers a lot of opportunities to make good stuff.
Now, we need to jump into Marvel TV because we've been half an hour on the past. And
okay.
We have Moon Groove now. Before
thank
we
you
do
for
that,
keeping us on
I'm
task.
I'm Garden. Now, I also would like to thank the live chat for giving us some thumbs up because we got two sudden thumbs down. We talked about Last Jedi, which I find very funny. I wanted to point out that
but some people, happened. I did see some people saying that they liked it and some that they didn't.
That's so funny. So Marvel TV, we had in the past Legion, Iron Fist, Defenders, and Inhumans.
And
now,
Shield.
Okay,
yeah,
wait,
Shield.
Wait, run that down again.
50-50.
I totally agree. We had Legion,
yay,
Iron Fist, Defenders,
Inhumans.
Yeah.
So I'm gonna go ahead and say that it was a wash.
It's a roller coaster.
I really
did we come out even.
We made TV.
No. All right,
we made some TV.
I am actually another defender. That I am a
defender of Defenders
is Iron Fist. I am an Iron Fist fan there. I said it. I can't take it back. It's out there.
I like it more than most.
Why are you an Iron Fist fan? Share with us.
Okay. Other than the fact that he's clearly not right for the role, which,
which is so great when you want, when you have fun to leave. Like, that's what they looked for in Charlie Cox and Daredevil. They were like, who could be the worst guy to bring Daredevil to life?
Room for Best Picture.
That's great.
Room for Best Picture.
Other than that, it's actually really fun. So Finn Jones could use some work on his martial arts. That's lacking for sure. Mm-hmm. But I actually think the rest of it's pretty cool. So if you can just get it through your head, like, he's not going to get better at what he's doing for this show, then you kind of start to enjoy it.
I watched it much faster than some other shows. I definitely watched it like in a few settings where some other shows I've definitely had to stop and take a breather. I liked a lot of it, but I couldn't ever accept the fact that like the guy that was supposed to be the best fighter felt like he was handicapped fighting anyone else.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Every single other person, like there was a kid walking across the street, I'm like, that kid could beat up Finn.
And his girlfriend also in The Force Awakens.
And she was incredible.
She was really good.
And she's great in the show too.
I thought The Daughters of the Dragon was one of the best parts of the show. Yeah. I thought the world building was great. I love Luke and Finn. Luke and Iron Fist. I love the Heroes for Hire moments.
But also Luke and Finn.
And Defenders you're talking about.
Yeah, you're talking about Defenders.
Yeah, sorry. I left ahead because I'm tying to Iron Fist.
Sure, sure.
But okay. I really think that Iron Fist set up a lot of good ideas that'll be executed well in season two. I don't hate it nearly as much as people do. I give it like a 6 out of 10.
I will say this. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm not an Iron Fist fan. I'm a Iron Fist fan when it comes to comics. Yeah, but the thing of it is that there are, I do believe in being able to find things no matter what the property is that just like you respond and relate to. I really enjoy the episode. I believe it's episode 6. It's the tournament episode where they have, you know, Bride of Nine Spiders, and, you know, they bring back some old villains to go up against Iron Fist. I feel like that's done really well.
That is a good episode. RZA's
the one that directs that. But in particular, my favorite 10 minutes of Iron Fist is episode 8. I think it's something with Shattered Feelings. It is Louis Tan as, and he's Zhao Xing, and it's the Drunken Master fight.
Oh, right. The Drunken Master fight was awesome.
Isn't that so
good? Well, I love that they referenced my favorite martial arts movie of all time. Yeah. You know? The first one, actually.
But before we move on from Iron Fist, because we have a lot to cover, Iron Fist also, I think Finn Jones was only given like 12 hours per fight scene to train, and that's not his fault. So I'm going to, Finn, since you're watching, we understand.
His fault was the producer. I think Scott Buck has proved that he needs.
Season 2 is going to be much better because
Scott Buck has earned him place an evacuation from the Marvel Universe, right? Like, he's 0-2. You're out of here. I will say this. My favorite moment of Iron Fist was that 30 seconds when they showed him in the costume in Iron Fist 38, was it? Or Iron Fist 43, when like they showed him black and white on a screen.
Oh, yeah.
And he was in the costume and messing fools up.
Yeah.
By far the best part of the entire series.
And that's what season 2 can
be. Where is that? Yes. Hopefully, Finn Jones has been just training his ass off
for months.
I don't think so.
No, come on.
Defender of shows like, nah.
I love your point of view.
At Comic-Con this year, he was the happiest guy in the room. He does not hear us. He's training his ass off.
He's watching right now.
He is like,
we love you, Finch.
Whatever. I am laughing straight to the bank, and he is loving it. So good for him.
Good television. Legion is my biggest surprise of the year. I'm giving out awards at random.
Oh my God. Aubrey Plaza in Legion.
Legion's in-camera editing, the likes of Kubrick, was so beautiful to watch, so jarring, and the mental escapades we went through as an audience joining his mental escapades, I didn't think we'd get there with TV. I didn't think we could do that with long
So form. Bold to make a show that, like, you, the first episode is challenging to get through because you're not, so many shows have to do the thing, like, on a network, you have to let you know what the show is in the first 10 minutes, and it could be so jarring. And this show is, like, out to lunch, and the, I fell for it. I thought Aubrey Plaza was wasted. Like, they wasted her. I'm like, oh, I'm an idiot. I fell for it. Like, yeah, amazing.
So
it was phenomenal. I agree, Adam, that for the first episode, and not just the first episode, but maybe the first three, I was like, is this show for me?
Yeah, challenging.
I'm gonna do it because I don't give up on things. Not people, not shows, nothing.
Not Finn Jones.
Not you at home. I give up on no one. But I was like, oh, am I going to enjoy it? I don't know. But then it just,
it gets you.
Like, oh,
you don't even realize it's hooks in you from the very beginning. When you're like, wait, was that imaginary or was that real? And that where there was the giant number and then there was the different words saying hello in the greeting room. That's weird. Yeah. No greeting rooms would have that. And then you see that scene again, like in a different time, and it's like, wait, that wasn't there before.
And what they did in real time, like the effects in real time, showed what an X-Men movie could be. And that was really interesting to be like, oh, a TV budget did X-Men better than we've had at X-Men. And it also showed me like what Fox TV could become. And I was really impressed with Fox letting them
You're
make
absolutely
that
right
show.
About that. It was the most X-Men I felt like. When I was collecting comics, I always felt like the Chris Claremont books were like my smart books. I kept them off to the side. Like, it was always very complicated.
Super brainy.
And yeah, it was like that, but even more so. Like, it was really, really challenging.
So I feel like we'll go through the good fairly quickly. We also need to talk about Defenders, which I think the reason I think Iron Fist Season 2 might be better is I definitely think Finn Jones as Iron Fist was much better in Defenders. My favorite thing about Defenders, before we dive in, was the fact that it used not only visual color cues to play like the comics did, like when characters were introduced, you had your yellow, you had your blue, you had your red, but also they used music cues for Luke Cage. So every single show felt like it was represented tonally, but it all meshed together like this great, it was like now that's what I call Marvel. It was like this greatest hits Netflix show, and I loved it.
I had all the way till 14. Now, that's what I call Blizzard 14. Yeah, I really stuck with that for a long time. This
They're on like
100 great.
Now.
I
We're
know.
Old.
I, and then I stopped. It was, again, first three episodes, I was like, And then the end of episode three, and then I was like, whoop, and now we're a team. Yep. Because what people forget going into this is that we were not together.
No.
So we had to figure out how the F to get them all together.
And I love that it didn't do it in the pilot. I love that it didn't dive in right away. It slow burned like a comic book. It's serialized.
That's hallmark of the Netflix shows, is that they just take their time before you get the thing. Like, you don't get to see Frank Castle in the Punisher shirt in the first episode. Like, any of that stuff. They make you work for every moment.
But it's because they know that you can watch the next episode right there if you're on the fence. If they were weak by week, people would have fallen off of Defenders after episode two.
It's built for binging. Yeah. It's so specifically built for binging.
It's not eight episodes, it's an 8-hour movie. Yeah. And I'm okay with that.
It's so strong.
Something with Defenders that I particularly enjoy, just to jump on this bandwagon with things, is how it's these separate stories coming together and actually, like he was saying, meshing really well to the point where you have Luke Cage and Iron Fist starting their bromance. And that's one of the reasons why I'm going to watch Iron Fist Season 2, despite the fact that I wasn't really
Luke Cage
on board
in
with the first
one.
And because Luke Cage, and because we have Daughters of the Dragon, and because we have Misty Knight, and she lost the
hand. She's awesome, and she lost the hand.
You know.
Awesome. In Defenders, right?
In Defenders.
So that was cool.
In Defenders.
Because she makes it through Luke Cage, which I thought was cool. But I agree with you. I've never liked Finn Jones as much as when I've seen him with Mike Coulter in those scenes, and that's all that matters.
I love that they were just
that's
like,
all we're trying to get
to
anyway. So, honestly, Netflix has given me enough good stuff that I'm with you. I didn't like Iron Fist, but I'm willing to give him a pass. Like, it was one that sucked. Mm. Okay. Two seasons of great Daredevil, amazing Jessica Jones, mostly great Luke Cage. Punisher was sick and different.
Oh,
like,
God.
Their track record is awesome. Not everyone can be, like, perfect, you know?
And I think that it set us up for more world building, and I think Daredevil Season 3 will be better for it, because we're going to get a great Frank Miller storyline. And I also think we need to discuss another folly.
Really quick, though, I mean, if we're thinking about it, I like the way that you laid that out. Because if you think about it, Marvel Netflix was like a person, that's marriage material. Because
Definitely!
I married Marvel Netflix.
There's like this
second.
Much that's not good.
So they leave the toilet seat up. Oh, I don't care. No. They also cook like a great mignonette. I mean, I don't know.
At least a long-term hookup. Not a hit it and quit it kind of thing.
You move in with Marvel Netflix. Yeah. See how it works. They might put the toilet paper roll upside down like a fool.
You might be wrong for each other, but they're definitely marriage material.
They've met mom. They've met mom for sure.
Fox Marvel, I might like couple times I'd be in and out behind, and then see him a couple years later. I'd be like, all right, it was good between us.
Now, someone I wouldn't bring home to mom was Inhumans. I wouldn't bring a single Inhuman home to mom.
That I would not even tell my friends about if something happened there.
This was a show we only can briefly talk about because we're 45 minutes in and still in the past. But Inhumans shaved Medusa's head with regular clippers and Karnak tripped over a rock. First time we've been quiet this whole 49 minutes was Inhumans.
Between Gifted and Inhumans, I was like, you guys, don't do this to me.
Yep.
Don't do this to me.
Did any of you go to IMAX?
No.
I spent money and I saw an IMAX. And
you
honestly, I was pretty positive about it when I walked out at first because I loved some of the Black Bolt scenes. Like that one scene where he like gasps and like, I really liked his performance and I really liked the sign language stuff. But then it didn't take long for that to all leave, and I realized, hey, to do that to Medusa, it was just like, why do it just because you can? It was foolish of them to try to do it. Yeah.
My number one criticism of this particular Marvel property was the fact that within Inhumans, this is a time where you go full Jack Kirby, and for the very fact that we're post Doctor Strange and everything else, where it's like you can go, you know, full butt Kirby.
Wasn't that this year?
No, Doctor Strange,
that was last November
year.
Last year.
And the what thing of it is that instead of 2017, and instead of them embracing that, they instead embraced a budget and put that ahead of the property. And so when you have that kind of mentality, then with those actual inhuman characters, their powers and their gifts, like Medusa's hair, like Karnak's ability to be able to see fault and everything, that becomes a hurdle. That becomes a hindrance. And then it seemed like they spent the entire time just trying to get rid of that. And it's like, no, that's what makes them inhumans. They went through Terrigenesis. This is part of the reason why they are a cog within this giant community. You're taking away their purpose when you do that. So that's why you don't have a story.
Do you think they're going to keep these characters in the current Marvel Universe? Like, will we see that Crystal again or that Karnak or any of that?
I kind of doubt it. But, I mean, some people did like
it. On S.H.I.E.L.D. maybe?
Yeah, maybe S.H.I.E.L.D. Maybe they
This is just my own personal opinion with it. Other people, obviously, like, it responded to them. And when it ultimately comes down to it, have your nerd out. Have your nerd done.
Enjoy what you enjoy. That's the point of this holiday special. Speaking of, we are now on to the Ghost of Christmas Present.
Whoa, wow.
Hey, a new ghost has visited us, and that features... Now we're going to switch to Marvel first. We did DC
Goodbye,
first
Jacob
last time.
Marley.
Goodbye, past. Hello, present.
Oh, the get present. Rid of those chains.
So we did DC first last time. We're doing Marvel first this time. The Marvel movie that we're going to speak of first will be Thor Ragnarok.
Because it just happened in November, because it's present.
Yeah, that's present. It's still in some theaters. So
there you go.
Thor Ragnarok is a Kirby Simonson extravaganza. Thor was insane. Thor trusted the audiences to enjoy. It made a lot of money because they know they can make something weird. And I think that it really deserves a stake in the comic climate.
They embraced it. It was a 70s music video, and I was here for it.
It made Jeff Goldblum seem normal.
It was very apparent from the first 30 seconds of this film what it was going to be. And it lived up to its promise, and it was awesome. I had seen the first two Thors when they came out, obviously, but I decided to watch them again to give them another shot because I remembered them the opposite of fondly. What would that be? Not fondly?
She gives everyone a chance. She
well,
watches
the second
Thor.
One.
Yeah, so the it first happened. One I was like, all right, it's just bland, but I'm in. The second one I was like, okay, it's bland and I'm not in. And the third one I was like, going in, all right, do I even care? And I went and I was like, oh my God, like, you had to do this, otherwise I gave no F's. And so this made me actually think that something was fun, and I enjoyed it so much. I was not expecting to. I would watch this movie. This is another rewatchable.
Oh, 100%.
Why not? And even if you haven't seen the first two, I would watch this film. Even if you haven't seen a Marvel film in general.
It's so good, separate of everything. And it also had world building that works later, but it doesn't have to. Like, there was, we got to see pieces of Marvel that you wouldn't see anywhere else, and now they can use that or not. They mentioned Throg.
They got Throg!
No other movie could talk about. Yeah, oh no other God. Movie could throw that in casually like this did, and it made it work.
But then we also lost a huge character going into this movie, and I didn't care that she was gone. So
she didn't die.
I'm not saying that we didn't have her
schedule didn't work.
But
that means that she.
Are you talking about
die.
Sif or Jane Foster?
Jamie Alexander.
Okay. Yeah.
That's funny.
That was crazy because they didn't even mention. Like mine at least got a mention, but she was so weak in the first two films that it was so unnecessary. And they just were like, yeah, it didn't work out.
There was one line of dialogue, and they also gave more Loki dialogue to make up for it.
Which
and that
was
romance
epic.
Was amazing. What? And Doctor Strange's cameo felt so natural.
Yeah.
That was one of the moments I was like, oh, Marvel's really built a separate thing, because look how casually Doctor Strange is in this, in a separate movie with the gloves, and you're like, oh, that makes sense.
Yeah. I love this movie so much. Much like to parallel Wolverine in the same year, where like the third in the trilogy, by far and away, goes in a different direction, and yet the consistency of the character played by the actor doesn't feel weird, even though it's totally different tonally in totally different ways than Logan and Thor Ragnarok, but also to make major shifts in the continuity and the canon. Major things happen to characters. My favorite character in all of comicdom, the glorious, incredible Hulk, makes a wonderful appearance. And, you know, at first I was like, all right, would he talk like that? I don't know. I don't feel. And then I, upon subsequent viewings, I love it. I love the Hulk. Hulk and Batman are my two favorite characters in fiction, you know?
Yeah.
They're just, you know.
I didn't know that about Hulk.
Yeah, yeah. I have more comics, like consistent runs of Batman and Hulk than anything else by a good margin.
And this was our, nice. Our Hulk that we couldn't have introduced somewhere else. You couldn't have Hulk randomly start talking. Yeah. Like, what I'm saying about like Taika Waititi's vision is you can start these things in this weird movie, bring him into
Avengers.
When
he's in the freaking hot tub, man. That hot tub scene.
With the Ultimate Hulk necklace. He literally is wearing stuff out of the comics and it works.
And nice. Valkyrie?
Yeah, Valkyrie.
Doing her thing. Like, totally. Crazy. We've never seen a Valkyrie that works a robot ship, but that was better. Again, so again, cool example was that was a better Valkyrie than I ever thought or thought you
and
cared
to Valkyrie a job title was brilliant.
Yes!
Excellent. Brilliant. The Hulk and Valkyrie, like, relationship, I was here for that. And then, like, the I don't know, what's the opposite of a bromance? Because you have frenemies, yeah, like right. a bro frenemy.
Who are you referring to? Which characters?
Hulk and Thor, when, like, it first started.
It is kind
and
of
then,
a bromance. Yeah. I mean,
and then it became a bromance.
But it's kind of brotherly, too. It has a brotherly vibe. I mean, I know bro is brother, but, like, it feels like Thor was, like, an older brother, in a sense.
You're my favorite! I've always liked you more than the other guy, which he plays to both of them. Like, the writing was fun. Yes. It felt inventive. It was definitely a different departure.
And before Infinity War and Black Panther, like, the way they time these and place it, like, so it's smart. So good.
It's going to end with 22 films, and they paced it well. And speaking
and Korg and Meek. Meek forever.
And Jeff Goldblum.
We're waiting for that.
Jeff Goldblum. Yeah.
Good Korg God, Jeff Goldblum.
Meek. Oh, my God.
Jeff Goldblum Jeff stops Goldblum. In the middle of a sentence, in the middle of the movie. Jeff he just, Goldblum. Like, puts the brakes on the entire film and just goes...
And you're,
what?
And that fit because the movie is so weird. What is like,
yeah, see this what are you talking about?
And they push him slowly in.
Excellent.
Now, speaking of your other favorite besides Hulk, the Batman was in a film this year. In the present.
Oh, yes.
Is that how we talk about it?
It is in the present.
In the present.
In the present. Just?
It just happened.
All right. Your thoughts on Justice League.
Okay. That makes sense. I thought Justice League was so much better than I expected. Mm-hmm. I thought Justice League was a really fun time. I thought Justice League was colorful, lively, entertaining. I thought that the preconceived notions were too strongly tied to the negative. I think we went in post-BVS and not pre-Justice League. We left Batman vs. Superman expecting to be angry at Justice League. I left Justice League very happy. I really enjoyed Flash. I really thought Crazy Trucker Aquaman worked for me. I'm really excited to see what Man of Steel is now that he's my Superman. And I'm really excited to see what Henry Cavill post-Man from Uncle pre-Man of Steel 2 becomes. Because I like Henry Cavill.
And post-Mission Impossible 6.
Post-Mission Impossible mustache. I mean, maybe I just like it's a quality mustache. But I really thought Justice League... by the third act of Justice League, I was like, yeah! But it took a while.
Do you guys remember when it came out about freaking Gal Gadot's armpit hair having to get CG'd out? No. And that was a huge deal. Armpit gate.
I didn't even mention Gal Gadot.
Stash gate?
I didn't even mention Gal Gadot. Because she's so strong. Gal Gadot, Wonder Woman plus Gal Gadot Justice League is just universal yes. Every time she was on screen, I was like, oh, this movie's amazing. Gal Gadot is Wonder Woman.
Incredible.
So, like, I enjoyed it. It wasn't my favorite movie, but it definitely wasn't bad.
Right. Yeah, I really enjoyed how well they introduced their three rooks. Like, bringing in Aquaman and, oh, my God, he's just, I'm here for y'all's Aquaman. I'm going to say that right off the bat.
You and me both.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Yes.
And I get it.
But I really like how they did Cyborg.
Me too.
Like he was vulnerable, but so strong.
He was on our show. Did you see? Like he was awesome, and like he was really good.
I'm trying to scheme
a
way to have him on ours. Be like, maybe he likes Marvel a lot or something.
I wonder but if like him, and DC would be like, yeah, okay.
Sure, let's get some press.
Yeah, I really enjoyed Flash's relationship with his father in prison. Like, when I first saw that, I felt like that hit a real note. And I appreciated that level of vulnerability, like, straight off the bat when they had that. I understood that they were kind of setting him up for, like, a Peter Parker type character, like, kind of like how we had for a Spider-Man. I thought for what DC does with, like, its grounded grittiness, I thought that that fit well within what they do with their genre. So I enjoyed that Flash. I enjoyed his bouts of comedy and everything. And I kind of enjoyed how people weren't pulling the punches when it came to Batman.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I appreciated that for, you know, the recognition
when he's like acting like a dick, you mean? Or
yeah, that and just in general where it's like he's trying for this relationship with a Wonder Woman and she's like, I'm here for the work. Mm-hmm. What's going on with you? I appreciated that. And when all of them got together to go up against Steppenwolf and it just, and then like they failed like the first time. Mm-hmm. And I felt like that was, yes, because they all just got together. If they defeat him now, it makes absolutely no sense. But then later on, when they're like standing, like what was a mountaintop or something like that, and they're standing and looking off into the distance, and I'm like, wow, this is our Justice League. And I enjoyed the fight that they had with Superman because, yes, that's the way that would have gone.
That's my favorite scene.
That's the Justice League.
By far.
I still love that sitting on the lasso.
The Flash mod.
What I would have done with Justice League.
The Flash when Superman's like, what you doing?
Side eye.
They could have easily done the death and return of Superman in Justice League by having Superman come back and have the fight be Superman be the villain. If that scene in Superman was my favorite scene, I would love the third act of Superman.
And clearly, did you notice that he had his lip in that scene?
Yeah, no. so clearly that was an option. Yeah, exactly.
I have never felt less, more out of touch with reality than this winter with the critical reception of Justice League and Last Jedi. Two movies in which I really, really enjoyed. Looking at the amount of hate that they're both getting, Justice League way more than Star Wars, I was shocked. We luckily got to go see this screening on the Warner Brothers lot. We were very early to see it, so I didn't hear from anybody else how they were thinking it was. We went, we walked out, and we were like, wow, really strong movie. Can't wait for people to like this. Adam and I, more so than Mike and Johnny, were like, we could see people having some qualms with it.
Yeah,
but I was thinking like maybe 70% Rotten Tomatoes. I was shocked with where this went. So I feel very lost. Like, they actually presented us something that had flaws but was a good product, and people bashed it.
Yeah.
And I think that's just, like I said, a product of BVS more than Justice League. I think
maybe because it was just, you know, at a certain point it becomes cool to just bash something or cool.
It got a Superman, though.
I think this film had so much on its shoulders from the beginning. And here's what really happened. This is how I see it from how we do this show every week. It's like, they were trying to tie together BVS and Justice League, and they had a plan. They clearly changed their plan. We've heard that they wanted to fire Zack Snyder before Justice League. So we have a film that was already in production that had to then change the way that the future films were going to be when it was meant to be the guiding post for future films. They had to change that and then brought in a new director, and I had no expectations. I thought Joss Whedon was maybe going to save the film because I'm like, why would he want to get involved again after getting his ass kicked on Avengers 2? I heard him talk in Comic-Con. I'm like, if Joss Whedon's in here, maybe it's going to be good. But
he got off Twitter. He was like, I can't even hang. Like,
exactly. So I thought they had good ideas.
So it was in DC's house.
A lot of the things that people are complaining about, like it was too short, like they cut out Aquaman and stuff, I think that was more to service James Wan's film. Like the fact that they cut out Atlantis and all this stuff is because this Justice League became more of a standalone film and less of a gateway to the future of DC films, and they wanted to give James Wan more his film.
And that's fine.
And take out Kiersey Clemens and open up what they might want to do with Flashpoint. They just, things are changing.
Yep.
And this was a transitional film, but it was still, I agree with you, better than I thought it had any right to be. But also, my favorite scenes were Superman scenes, and I couldn't stand that freaking mustache, man. Superman. It really was disgusting.
The villain and the mustache were hilarious.
And so that mustache keeps it from being rewatchable. Like, I don't want to rewatch that movie because of that.
No, that's ridiculous. Yeah. You have to get over that.
No, it's not beautiful.
But the villain people are hating on so much, and to me, just for, like, it didn't matter. The villain just really didn't matter. This was called the Justice League. It's about the Justice League. And by the way, spoiler alert, if you stayed for the post-credit scene, then you're excited then about where our villains are going.
No, and I agree with that. I just didn't like that the villain felt so much like Megatron.
I was told to get a cookie to cheer me up.
Megatron felt like...
The chat.
No, the live chat also mentions... The live chat also mentions that it's an entire chat of Marvel and DC fans together, and it's all love in the live chat. So thank you guys for keeping it amazing. That's exactly what I wanted this to
be. Draw blood!
So we're going to move on to TV because of time, and we had in the present... Marvel TV was Punisher, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., Runaways, The Gifted, and soon to be New Warriors going to be in the future. So, Punisher, Agents of S.H.I.L.D., Runaways, and Gifted. That's a lot of great TV. We've clearly evolved this.
Runaways.
I'm loving Runaways right now.
So, we'll start with Runaways.
Sick.
Runaways is incredible. Ryan, we need to watch it.
Hit everything. Yeah, Ryan, we love you, dude.
Do you guys know the dad, Jeffrey Wilder, on Runaways?
Yes.
My favorite
Huge
character.
Marvel fan.
He was a fan of our show and reached out, came on. He loves Marvel movie news.
Oh, that's awesome.
So, he's a Marvel fan, but also a Marvel movie news fan. Ryan is my favorite character in the show. He's a great human being. We appreciate you.
The show is dope.
It's so good. Yeah. It's so good.
Did you guys watch the OC? Do you guys say your generation? I never saw that stuff. This is like my first time watching the OC.
Obviously, it was amazing. I am a little confused on why their mid-commercials are like, in LA. It's like, you have so much to sell. Why is LA the thing that you guys are selling? I get that location is really important, but like, it's literally every commercial break. Like, here we are in LA. It's like, what?
Well, I guess everywhere else except for here is like, yeah, everything's like in LA.
So Runaways is like LA.
I literally don't even care. This show is dope.
And it feels like Los Angeles. If you're from here, you know how it feels, and they captured that really well.
I got invited to the premiere. You know, sometimes even for the streaming services, they have these premieres, right? Mm-hmm. So I went and saw it in a theater. So the first episode of Runaways.
Nice.
And Nico's scene, her first scene when she had the headphones in. I started bawling like a little schoolgirl.
Yes.
I don't know what happened. Where she like listens to this whole thing that like Alex says to her, and then she's just like headphones, and she walks away
and pretends that she's been
Such I'm getting choked up just talking about it. I was like crazy.
It feels like teenhood. It feels like accurate. It doesn't feel melodramatic. It doesn't feel out of place. It doesn't feel out of touch.
I love how they humanize the parents. I mean, like when you actually like read the books, you know, it's all about the kids, and it's pretty much off Jump Street where it's then they go into their runaways and they're trying to, you know, balance out the force with being superheroes to their parents, supervillains. While with this, we take the time to actually visit those great areas that you get.
You
with
see Nico's mom hysterical.
I love Brittany Ishibashi. Are you kidding
me? That's like
me?
Exactly what you're talking about.
Yes.
That is that gray area where you're like, this is a stone cold woman. And then you're like, unless
they don't let you have it. They don't let you just close the books on anybody, which is what keeps a great series going.
And we need those female adults to be strong, because right now I will say the kid females are annoying. They're more annoying than the male kids right now. And I just want to be like, Gert, chill, bro.
I know.
You will get your man if you just chill. Like,
it's like you're coming out too strong.
Chill.
Just back off.
But you know her, though. She exists, though. Yeah. You know that person.
Everyone knows that person.
Not everyone knows that person. That's why I'm so glad the women are ballers.
It was my first...
It's like everybody knows Molly. I'm like, oh, Molly, girl, just chill out.
It was the first show where I'm in between, like, that teen and adult. I don't have a kid, but I'm also not a teenager. And it was the first show I was like, oh, I'm identifying with the parents. Oh, God.
Yeah.
Like, it was like, am I the adult? I'm the adult! And, like, it was the first time I, like, watched the show, and I was like, oh, this is what it feels like. And I really appreciate the fact that I don't think the kids are dumb because they're so well-written, but I definitely understand what the parents are doing to protect their kids. It's, everyone's written well.
That's the coolest part I hear, because I haven't read the comics, but I hear that Greg, what's the character's
Sulkin?
Name?
Oh, Chase.
Greg Sulkin.
Chase, that in the comics that he's a more bro-y dumb, but that's so cool that in this they were like, nope, you're wicked smart, dude.
And I don't know if
that's your greatest secret.
It's like your boss is smart.
I'm not sure if I'm supposed to talk about it or not, but I'm going to do it anyway because we're live. I got to interview Greg for a thing, and I was talking to Greg, and he said that everything leading up to the finale is just building up to the finale. This is all leading up to like a feature film finale. Everything at the end is just this giant crescendo of powers and like old lace, and the idea that a show can be this important while it's leading up to a huge, like, I think that's interesting.
They took a good couple of episodes before they really got you in the supernatural, which is what you gotta do. Like, you have to be in the world of just these real people, and then when it goes bug nuts supernatural, you're on board for it because you're emotionally invested. And, like, that's just character stuff, which I think is what is the big defining trait of any of this comic book stuff 100%. Done well versus not.
Yep.
It's like building the characters, and then the special effects take care of themselves.
And
the fight choreography.
A practical raptor. A practical dinosaur.
Yes,
it's so
smart. Effects.
Like, can we tell, like, lace is one of the best things to happen in TV, much less superhero TV.
I'm wondering how the millennials feel about that. How do the younger people feel about the fact that it's a puppet?
Tell us.
And not an animated
dinosaur. It looks better than Jurassic World did.
Yeah.
And the budget's, the catering budget on Jurassic World is old lace, but she looks better.
Yeah, but and clearly
like
they don't have the
World.
Budget to do like a Game of Thrones dragon.
Loves everything.
Not everything, but the things other people hate, I don't know what
happened. Were you on the puppet dragon?
No, she likes Jurassic World.
Real quick, Adam.
Yeah.
I guess technically I am considered a millennial.
Okay.
Oh, what do you think?
I love the puppetry.
Yeah,
I love practical effects. I grew up with The Thing, watching The Thing practical effects. So I'm glad that they use... it's always best when they use a mix of practical effects and CGI.
Augmented.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I agree.
Because it blends really well.
Yeah, there's nothing like that tactile sensation, like when you see that Jurassic Park dinosaur like lying down like that. It makes all the other ones make sense. Like, you know,
for anybody listening on
Yoda
iTunes,
Yoda too, right? Didn't they puppet Yoda?
Yeah,
this
Anthony
time?
And yeah. Boof. Thanks, Anthony.
Yeah,
and
thanks, Anthony.
And speaking of things being practical and brutal, and that's a very
Punisher!
It's the stretch of a tangent. Yeah, it's a
you
stretch
know,
of a
you
tangent.
Really want
a Punisher is insanely
so good.
Maybe
so
my
good.
Least favorite comic book character.
Oh, I was like, where's the sentence going?
I've never liked the Punisher as much as I like this incarnation of
John
it. And I've seen all of them, Dolph Lundgren, all of them.
Yeah, yeah. Here's what I do with my
you
favorite.
Saw Dirty
things.
Laundry.
Yes. That one's good. I like
I
that's
like
my
Dirty
second
Laundry.
Favorite.
Dirty Laundry.
Like for me, it's Netflix and then Dirty Laundry are my Punishers.
Oh, I like there Max too. The Max stuff later on, but as a kid, Punisher was not my guy. And this is so good. I mean, just this guy playing this, you know, and when this, the way the story was told with the dichotomy of a post-traumatic stress
yes.
situation.
The subject matter handled
and
so
and
well.
It was handled so delicately and, you know, they delayed, right? Didn't they not talk about it at Comic-Con
because
of all
the
gun
respect,
violence?
Yeah. Yeah.
And yet when it came out, I didn't hear anyone saying that it was tone deaf and it
right.
wasn't.
No.
It's,
no,
it was really
so
wasn't.
Realistic with it. I mean, it did what Jessica Jones did, like in a different way where it discussed and embraced PTSD and how that affects your life and the people around you. And it's like Punisher himself, he was so real. And I love how it started. It started with he won everything. He won.
His origin
he
took
did
place
his revenge.
Off screen. I love that it was a year two story.
Mm-hmm. He did everything. And then 6 months later, what does he have?
And that's the beauty of the character is the last line of the show is the thesis statement of the series and you get to there and you earn it. And like that's, he's trapped. He's forever looking for what his next thing is. And I also love that it handled the most difficult subject matter while also never being too heavy where you felt like you couldn't keep watching. Like the scene of them in the van with the hoagie was the funniest thing I've seen in a long time.
When you didn't give me one?
Yeah, he's like, did you make me one? He's like,
yeah, I love that too.
Whoa, that scene was so funny.
I love that too.
But, and if you told me 2 years ago, like, hey, there's going to be a show out called Punisher, I'd be like, okay, I'm interested. You tell me I'm going to care about Micro? Okay, fine. You tell me I'm going to care about Micro's family? I'm like, you're lying to me.
Yeah.
I was so invested.
I care about Billy Russo?
Like, oh, man. Oh, the Jigsaw Orange.
So, all right. What do Girl Interrupted, Catcher in the Rye, The Punisher all have in common? Well, Roxy does this thing where when she loves something, she decides not to finish it. So, okay. I am obsessed. Also, Pretty Little Liars. Pretty Little Liars. Pretty Little Liars is on that list. Nope. The book Girl Interrupted. So I wait on things that I love. I hold the last episode. So I have not seen, I've watched in the first weekend Punisher until the last episode. I love it so much that I just am not willing to let it go yet.
I do that with video games. I will play all the way up to like the final boss battle.
How jealous are you of me? I still have it.
You still have a new episode of Punisher. You still have a new episode. And it's a great episode. The final episode's incredible.
It is so R-rated. It's so raw.
One day. Don't be that jerk that tweets at me now.
Well, audience, but we can all agree, Punisher, I would argue, is my favorite Netflix show. And I think the Netflix corner is my favorite of the MCU.
It's so good.
Like Netflix, Daredevil season 1, Daredevil season 2, Jessica Jones. It's so consistent. Like we were saying, we'd marry this person.
Oh, yeah.
Punisher is definitely like, they're really good at with kids. Like, you know what I mean? It's like that, like, very important part of the relationship.
Punisher is really good with kids.
He was. He played football with that.
I'm still very. He's great with Deborah Ann Wall. That's what one thing is great. Like the sweet scenes that with Frank and these women. You know, whether it's Micro's family or Deborah Ann Wall.
Respectful.
It's like he's so respectful, but he's just you get it. He's so that guy.
No creep vibe at
no
all.
No creep vibe.
He makes me want to be a better man, but he also like is fighting and does a barrel roll with a body to hide bullets. Like what? Like
that's
the
amazing.
That, like the scene where he's like that chase happens. I was like, oh, this show's an action show. Oh right, I care about the family. Oh right, it's about all this important subject matter. Like Punisher was so,
and they integrated Karen really well.
Really well.
That's cool to say.
But I do love Daredevil stuff too. Oh, I love Daredevil 1 and 2 are amazing.
Yeah, because I'm not a Karen fan from Daredevil. I was more on board with this particular Punisher because of how they did her, you know, with the personality.
Yeah, I would agree with that because I know my girlfriend feels the same way. She's not the biggest fan of her, but to give her a totally different sort of point of view. And there's still mysteries with her, right? Like, didn't they set up things that she did in the past that have not paid off in, like, Daredevil season 1, I think?
She's still enigmatic, and that's good because she's not just a drug addict like she is in the comics at times. She's usually a little thinner written, and I really think that this show sets us up for a lot more, and it also is just so smart. I appreciate how intelligent it was. Now, speaking of very good written, very smart shows, The Gifted is so much better than I expected it to
be. So I only watched the first two, and then I did fall off. Remember how I told you guys I don't give up on things? Okay, so I lied sometimes.
No problem.
But I'm hearing that I should keep going. I just felt like they didn't grab me enough.
It feels like a network show more than any of the other ones we've listed. If you have the caveat of knowing it's a Fox show, it does start to feel like a Fox show, but I like the characters enough, I'm in.
Yeah, I feel like they wasted an actress in it, and then that had me be... It was a little more difficult. Amy... oh, dear God. She was an Angel.
Did they kill her off on the show?
No. Like, the actress herself. I felt like they needed to give her something meatier. She played Strucker's wife. The chat room could actually tell me. Amy Acker.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. There we go. Thank
you. There you go. Wow,
thank
they were
you,
right
thank
on
you,
that.
Thank you. Yeah, no, that happens to me a lot. I forget people's names.
No, that's great. And so, you had more people still with Amy Acker. You were typing for placement on that.
Yeah, but I feel like, I mean, you have this, she's an incredible actress. She has such a body of work. I mean, I loved her alone in Angel. She played two different characters, completely different from each other. If you haven't watched Angel, I do recommend.
I haven't.
I do recommend.
And who is she on Gifted? Because I've seen like four of Gifted or five of Gifted.
She's the wife. She's the mom.
Yeah, she's supposed to be a doctor. Oh, yeah. So with that, I felt like maybe there were too many parents. Maybe have one of the parents get captured or something. I also fell off after the second episode, so I'm kind of
So you're not caught up on Gifted
either? I'm not caught up.
I just jumped back in. I'm two behind, but I'm now up to seven or whatever. And I feel like once I accepted it was a network show, I was like, oh, here we are. Like, once it hit network, I was in. So since I'm going to watch it, let's move on to Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Okay. Yes,
it just started back up, so it's present.
I just started season one.
So you're in the past.
And you're like binging it?
It is my past.
Call back to season one. This is not going to mean much to you, but where the hell is Deathlok?
Well, they're in space.
Right, but he's been gone for a long time. Nobody's mentioned the word Deathlok.
Aren't they not only in space, but in the future, like way in the future?
There's a lot going on.
Yeah.
The Ghost Rider stuff was the best the show has been for me, just because it was like sort of a mainstream-ish, but even Ghost Rider is still kind of a B character, I guess. Yeah. My problem with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is just like there's really nobody from the comics that I can really sink my teeth into. There's no main characters, and... I've watched almost every episode. I'm like one behind, so I've stuck with it. But it doesn't totally feel like S.H.I.E.L.D. from the comics to me.
How great is Agent May, though?
She's awesome.
And I love Quake as well. Quake.
She's so good. Yeah, she kicks ass. Every time I see her and I'm like, that's Mulan, I just love it.
She's Mulan?
Yeah, that's Mulan.
Oh, no
that's
way.
Voice.
In the
Mulan.
Oh, man.
That's your, she's not playing the live action Mulan. Oh. She voices Mulan.
She's Mulan Mulan.
She voices Mulan.
Wow.
Disney. Wait, she
she's
was
OG,
fine?
OG Mulan.
Yeah.
No, she's like...
Oh, Agent May you're talking about. Yeah. Oh, I thought you were talking about Quake.
Not Quake. No, we're two different...
Gotcha.
I was like, what's happening right now?
Because Quake's half Asian. Okay, so I thought it could have been a Mulan.
No, she voices Mulan. I'm pretty positive you guys have me second guessing, but I think so.
I love Coulson. I love that actor. I love that it stays separate of the Marvel Universe, but touches on it occasionally. I think it's also another network, a network show, and I'm not big on like network tone, so I don't have much to say about it. But I do think that Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. fans are some of the coolest people. They're so into it. Like it's such a passion.
The problem is we are really spoiled beyond all the comic book shows with such great streaming shows and stuff like this. Like
Runaways and the Netflix stuff is more my
Runaways comes out, and I'm a new Runaways comes out. Like, you know what you like by what you actually watch, and when you see stuff building up, and I'm like, I kind of want to watch that Runaways.
Runaways is the perfect young adult show, and then all the Netflix stuff is my binge.
I got a couple of Shields, and I'm like, all right, when am I going to catch up on my Shields and like my 20 CW shows?
You know, it's a great time to catch up. Christmas time.
It is.
Look at this Christmas special.
Yeah, this entire special. No, just watch everything.
Of present TV, you guys, like I said earlier,
we have
DC
a lot going on.
Has been running the TV game.
Ooh.
I'm gonna go ahead and say this: Crossover X with Flash, Supergirl, Arrow, Legends. You guys also have Lucifer and Gotham. Go!
Yikes. Oh God, it's so good. Our crossover episodes were amazing. A lot of people said that the crossover was better than actual Justice League was, and I do. And I don't know if that's true.
An argument to be made,
but
there.
I do feel like it was super earned. Like, we've been watching these shows for a really long time, so to have that 4-hour crossover was like
it's just so cool to do.
Yeah,
I run out of patience sense with the shows that do 22, 23 episodes a year. I just feel like the story gets drawn out.
But we love them for actors who get paid for them.
They're good, but
they're great. Thanks.
The fact that this crossover just told a story.
Yeah.
Shows that these writers do know how to
and
write.
They're thinking so far ahead.
And they use their budget great. Like, I just don't like the way the stories are drawn out that long. I'm sorry. Like, it loses me. And I'm like 3 episodes behind a lot of the CW shows, but I jumped ahead to watch the crossover and I was super engaged and I thought it was amazing. I thought the way they used the special effects were great. I thought the Ray was amazing. It was so good.
We're losing a lot of our actors from Legends though, and we're switching things around. And
I like Legends. Legends is sort of my favorite show because it can be sort of anthology and less like, has to be less like a procedural.
If you're only going to watch one, that's one, because it's just like whack out of this world.
And that's what I think is amazing that they've done is they've not only built all these shows separately, they build them together and all the characters work together and the network trusts them to have a 4-hour, like the budget on that must have been crazy. And I really think it's a testament to where Comicdom is, like where this is. Like,
and Berlanti Comicdom knows this world, who famously wrote Green Lantern way in the dark of Christmas past.
Yeah.
But this guy is like a super nerd for DC, and obviously they went through a tremendous thing with Kreisberg right now.
CW's like a WB network. I mean, obviously, but CW's like a DC network now because of Arrow and Berlanti. Yeah. You know what I mean? Berlanti's reshaped.
And now
what
with
that
Black Lightning coming there.
Oh, that's, my
sorry,
God.
That's
well,
we're getting there. So Gotham. Gotham is really strong. Finally. Honestly, I really believe it. It's lost all of its viewers at this point because it teased, like, it did everything it could to make you want to leave. It was like, we dare you. Go ahead, we dare you.
Turn it off, maybe.
And everyone did. And then it was like, just kidding. We're actually going to be a dope show now.
How's the kid from Shameless as the Joker? Is he...
He is now coming back into
it. Is he the Joker,
it.
Though? No. Is he Cameron
Monaghan.
Yeah.
He is a talented actor.
Oh, he's so good in Shameless.
I don't understand why they're doing anything with him or what, but I don't mind him. Yeah. So that's cool. Lucifer is, I think, my favorite of the DC shows.
All right.
This show is rad, and you can catch up at any point. Like, just jump in.
That's what I need to catch up on, too.
That's what I need to watch.
Like, gory and weird, and you're like, can you show that on network television? 2 weeks ago, something happened where I was like, I'm... literally positive you're not allowed to show that.
What's the premise of it?
So it's this guy, Lucifer, who is the devil, who is here. He's been sent here from hell, and he is trying to escape his angelness, because he's an angel. Okay. And he is dealing with people. He's not allowed to kill anybody, because no angels can kill people. But he's like... granting wishes for people. So people, he can say to somebody, what's your greatest desire? And they say it to him, and he's works, but like in sneaky ways to try to get. And he's also now on the police force, but nobody knows.
He's a Vertigo character from like the Neil Gaiman verse.
Oh, I like
that era.
It's like the Lucifer.
Thank you. Those are the key words.
Yeah.
And they just introduced Cain as a character, which is really cool too. Like Cain and Abel.
Oh, that's cool. Oh, okay, yeah. So
because I went to wrestling. So
and
I'm,
quick
I'm
summation. quick summation. How do you guys feel about this season of Flash, Supergirl, and Arrow Legends individually? Like the actual 4 shows.
Okay, so I really love Manu Bennett. Is that his name?
Yep.
As Deathstroke.
Yeah,
I love that guy on Spartacus.
How do you think Joe Manganiello's going to do?
What's that?
How do you think Manganiello's going to do
for Deathstroke?
Oh, I liked him in the 12 seconds I saw of him.
He
looked
real good
when he was standing there.
I liked him as Alcide. I mean, that guy, he's got presence, man. He's got movie star.
Social media
charm, you know?
Game too. I like his hype for it. That's for sure real. And yeah, I think
but yeah, other than that, like I said, like the shows, like I don't find the CWDC shows as engaging as I would like. And with the amount of content, the amount of time I can spend watching TV or like living life is like getting limited, and the competition is getting high. So
like we said, Runaways are a big surprise. When Hulu announced Runaways, I was like, this might be great. And then it is great, I consistently am drawn to it.
Yeah.
So it goes Legends of this season. Alone, Legends of Tomorrow is number one, then it's Flash, then it's Supergirl, then it's Arrow. Mm-hmm. It's unfortunate that Supergirl is now my number 3 because it was my number 1 for the last couple of years.
Okay.
And I'm actually enjoying the Reign storyline, but the other two shows have stepped up their game while Supergirl has remained the same.
Perfect. All right. You heard it here first, folks.
Yeah. Now,
can't wait for... Oh, wait. We're getting into the future.
And now it's time for the Ghosts of Christmas Comic Miss Present.
Future. We just did the present.
But now you're in the future, which is your present.
That's true.
Future.
Whoa, it all makes present sense. Future. Retroactively.
And now.
Flashpoint.
And now. Okay.
Time for the Ghosts of Christmas Future.
Okay, now, so we're talking movies.
We're talking movie. DC is going to head us off. In the future of DC, we have confirmed Aquaman, Flashpoint, Batman Solo. It's confirmed, but it's wiggly. We also have, we have a shakeup that's coming. We have a Batgirl, a Shazam, 87 Harley Quinn movies, and Man of Steel 2 with a director, theoretically a director I love dearly, and Henry Cavill in a great Superman.
Maybe.
What do we got?
Well, Aquaman is the only DCU film next year, which points
looking
to...
Looking forward to it.
Yeah, I mean, again, to get back to the whole Justice League thing and the shakeup thing, it's like, I felt like they knew that they were switching strategy, which means that they had to slow down their output because they were changing the way they were making these films. Mm-hmm. I think James Wan almost walked away from Aquaman and then at the end decided to make the film because he got the approval over the filmmaking process that he wanted. I think the same things happens with Matt Reeves.
Yeah.
Because we're talking about the future. Mm. So I think that Justice League, unfortunately, I can't believe it didn't do as well. It did as poorly as it did because it was better than, I think, some of the other films that
it
crushed
like
it at the box office.
To me, Justice League felt like an annual, and now we have new news titles.
Well, started. Like the last comics that come out when they're cleaning up before you launch New 52 or Rebirth
a
or something.
A wrap-up annual.
So, you know, I think... I'm very optimistic about Aquaman, very optimistic about Shazam, extremely optimistic about Flashpoint, as I think it will be Ben Affleck's last Batman. And when he was talking about the way he wanted to transition, I think that's it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I'm optimistic about the future.
All in on Aquaman. Also pretty excited for many other of the movies we have slated.
Wonder
like
Woman
Shazam,
2.
Wonder Woman 2,
Wonder Woman
2.
It's just not next year, so
of course, with Patty. But what I'm not excited for is Flashpoint. I think it's too soon for a Flashpoint film. I don't understand why we're going Flashpoint. It's not fair. Ezra Miller was my least favorite of the Justice League, not just because of his performance, because I think he's a very talented performer, but because of the character. It just was awkward and didn't quite fit for me. And now we're going into a Flashpoint movie where I haven't even met his girlfriend. I don't even know his life, and now we're Flashpointing. Mm-hmm. It doesn't make sense to me. I get it as a good way to let's see Batman out the door, although I think it's even more confusing that we're going to have Jeffrey Dean Morgan in there during Flashpoint, and then we're going to have Nightwing take over as Batman.
Right.
We're
going to
do three Batmans in three consecutive years. What's happening here?
Yeah.
So I'm worried about that, but I'm excited for the future of DC, especially if we keep doing James Wan, Patty Jenkins, new blood.
Bold directors with vision.
Yes.
Strong directors. These are all brilliant directors.
Because we're interested in their point of view, right?
Yes.
That's what we
McKay.
Want. I mean, that's why you have Joss Whedon, right? Being Batgirl.
Yeah.
As far
it's
as
like
we
stand out. That is a strong point of view, allegedly.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's a really strong point of view. And look at his track record when it comes to like writing females or having strong females. And, you know, you have Buffy, you have...
And Scorsese and Joel Silver producing a Joker movie. Like,
I know.
There's a lot of big stuff.
There's
and
a lot of stuff,
creative,
but it's all floating out there. Yeah. And the thing is, the difference with the MCU versus DC is like Kevin Feige would never allow even the whisper of any of those films to be out there unless it was already confirmed and they knew that it was going.
Right.
DC makes no announcements. They're like backdoor side. I heard from someone here. There's no mouthpiece. There's nobody really speaking to it.
And Geoff Johns just got demoted pretty
much.
Yeah,
I mean, it's, well, I mean listen,
Jeff
there's...
who doesn't?
It's there's no confidence built up there, so there's a lot of potential ideas, but right now you don't have confidence in the brand, and you don't have people knowing what that product is going to be. That's why like a third Thor movie, when most people didn't like the second one,
make
can
it
still
crazy.
Crush because it's like they'll get it right because they're Marvel.
I'd go Batman Beyond at a Flashpoint. I'd just take it out in a weird world, have the Wachowskis direct it, make it a speed racer tone, crazy madness, and cast someone new and young.
But they're
Batman
scared.
Beyond.
They don't have... You need to be that
then what
bold.
Do you, do with your
you
Nightwing
need
film?
Confidence.
That can be the modern day. Have future Batman Beyond. Have present day Nightwing. Because screw it.
I would love for them to have an
then
Oracle
then it's different
film.
At least.
You know, if we could have a film with
well,
Oracle...
Well, that could be in a Gotham
like
City Sirens
be,
or something
want?
Like that.
For Oracle?
Yeah.
Oh, God, I don't know. I'd go with somebody fresh and new. I'm not really great at casting off the top of my head.
Yeah,
with
no,
things.
I'm really
I have
on
to,
the spot.
I have to actually think about it. But, yeah, but, I mean, thinking of that, I mean, I forget the name of the graphic novel that I read, but it was... Well, in any case, it was like Oracle Origins type of thing, but I think it was slightly off the actual path of it. But in any case, with having it be where she goes through everything that she does and she's still trying to be a support system for Batman and trying to hold up everything that had to do with Gotham at the same time, it was like, how do you not tell this story already? How is this not something huge or like a TV series or at least an animated series where we have her? I mean, not only is it pretty good representation for having somebody who's handy capable and then is also genius level and had to do all of her superheroine, you know, stuff before, but she also has to continue her life past that point.
And they have talked about having Cyborg be a representation for handy capable people and what exactly that would look like in the future, but I agree. I mean,
it's confusing when you have like Chris McKay talking about casting the Nightwing film and no one knows where that Nightwing is going to be born out of or what it means or where or what the Matt Reeves movies are going to be.
And the Teen Titans show that keeps popping up and out. And
so like, there's just so much uncertainty.
So
we know the next couple of films are going to be good. I mean, next year, like I said, there's only one film. So a lot's going to happen in the next year for the infrastructure.
Next year's Comic-Con is going to be nuts for you guys. And we also, like, we get Zach Levi and The Rock and Shazam. We get all this stuff.
Well, not The Rock is not confirmed for Shazam.
He's going to be in a Black Adam standalone.
That's what they're talking about. Who knows what will happen?
Yeah. We'll see. He's one of those actors that I'm happy with him doing DC and also Marvel. So I just want him to... The Rock. Yeah, I just want him to do everything, and I want him to bring Kevin Hart with him.
he doesn't have any Marvel yet, right?
No, yeah, not as far as I know.
Kevin Hart is going to find himself in one of those universes.
100%, man.
He's going to be like, he's just deciding which one.
Him to be like the Q character for some superheroes.
Yeah, that would be cool.
That'd be a lot of fun.
That would be really great.
So that would be your bold lineup of a lot of question marks and maybes, and of course Aquaman and Flashpoint are locked in, but over the course of the future... this is Marvel's next year. We have Black Panther, New Mutants, Infinity War, Deadpool 2, Ant-Man, Wasp, Venom, X-Men, Dark Phoenix, and Spider-Verse.
I'll see myself out.
So, but you guys have a younger universe. You have a younger universe. It's figuring, it's getting its feet.
That's what you say to basketball teams that are not doing well. You got a younger team. There's a lot of room for growth. You guys have a great...
Like I said, look at the TV we just listed. You guys are running the TV.
Y'all are hitting on TV and like animated series. Yeah. Oh my God. I love
want billion dollar blockbusters. TV.
I keep being like Runaways and Punisher. Runaways and Punisher. You guys are like, we've got 82 network shows.
He's stupid. Yeah. What a big blockbuster movie that everybody loves.
I love how accessible DC is for like TV and animated. I love really the Suicide Squad animated movie.
You guys having great movies means that movies are good. No, but that's a good thing for DC, for Marvel, for Star Wars, for any franchise that there is. Not even just franchise, movies. The better movies are, the better other movies are trying to step up their game.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So Black Panther looks so freaking good.
Oh my God.
And Infinity War is after that.
All right. It's going to be so good.
So me walking by Michael B. Jordan this week.
Right.
In a very skinny hallway. Where just the two of us. I'm at Soho House, and he's walking by, and we're in that narrow hallway where there's like, you couldn't look away, so I'm just staring him down, and he looks at me, and we walk, and he goes, hello, and I was like, hi, and then I thought to myself, I was like, why did he say hello to me? Oh my God, this is amazing. And then I was like, oh, because he's a nice human being, and that's what you do when you walk by somebody, and that is the whole story, but I like don't get that starstruck, and I was like, mouth on the ground, holy crapple roly.
I next year realized,
so cute,
next year there's only January is the only month there isn't a Marvel property dropping on other film or TV, which is
really
insane.
And who did you guys cast as like Mar-Vell? Wow. I know that's 2019.
Jude Law.
Yeah, screw you guys.
You might have heard of them. Jude Law, they're telling me.
Yeah, and you know what? Chances are, depending on how that deal works out, maybe we do get Super Skrull.
I love about this deal right now is now Rogue can absorb Captain Marvel, and we can actually get Rogue powers and stuff like that.
That is a fact.
Listen, I wanted to tell you, so with regard to that deal, I'm actually the only one at the table that might become unemployed by this deal, because I do a show called FX Movie Download, and I don't know if there will be an FX in a couple years, okay? But I'm still, as a fan, I'm like... yeah, unemployment, but I'm going to get to see a Hulk and Thing fight and maybe a Wolverine Hulk throwdown. Like, yeah, life's good. I'll get another job.
Childhood legacy job. What do you want?
I'm glad you feel that way, but the fact that 5,000 to 10,000 jobs are going to be lost is no... It's no freaking joke, man. This is this is huge. And
monopolies are not a good thing.
You're lucky because you have diversified your career enough that you'll be fine. And like, I actually don't know if that show is going anywhere. We don't know. FX has some amazing shows. So as a consumer, even that's not something I would want to see. I love FX. I love Fox. And I'm confused about what's going to happen to Gotham and Lucifer, which both shows, by the way, I said I love because there's no way that they're going to let Disney take
them. But here's the thing, Fox. I heard that Fox that Disney doesn't own the Fox network now.
No, they have the entertainment division, but Fox
and the cable
news
ones.
News and sports is what they're keeping, but they're getting everything scripted. Else.
Because like, the broadcast network, because Disney owns ABC, I heard that they couldn't acquire Fox, the network as well, because you couldn't have multiple networks. But what I heard was that they could get the cable channels.
Interesting.
And haven't people been talking about
they're
that.
They're getting to pluck their shows.
Yeah, well, they'll have the studios that produce a lot of the shows, but the ownership of the network itself, I believe that is some kind of monopoly situation.
Yeah.
But that doesn't apply to FX, FXX, and of course the studios, the animation, Blue Sky Animation, that produce all that stuff. Do you guys think that they will keep, like, 20th Century Fox as a studio to make normal adult movies?
Because I think that would be so smart for them to do, because think about it. Disney is, they're a brand of kindness, you know? They're the kind brand. When you think of Disney, you think a certain specific. You don't think of something like Logan or Deadpool or the
you
awesomeness
need to have a
that
brand
Black
over,
Panther.
Yeah.
But it's, if they keep something like that and then just
keep
on producing
pertaining to the Marvel movies, I've already heard that, yes, Bob Iger said that Deadpool will keep its R rating in tone, but do you think they'll do like a Max line of Marvel films or something like that?
I think they easily could, and it would
Deadpool,
be smart.
X-Force. That's
Moon
what I want.
Moon Knight
to be like the raid. So many releases, though, and what you guys have to remember is now they would be competing with themselves.
Yeah, that's my concern. My concern from the beginning was Fox had their own universe. They could put out a movie three times a year.
Which, from the DC point of view, means that in 2 years, I feel like there'll be a more equitable amount of Marvel versus DC films. Not next year, but DC is going to be really quickly at the point where there'll be three and four coming out.
Yeah,
in 2019 and 2020.
I'd say 2020, they're going to be neck and neck. And I also think because of the way Fox has structured their world, they can't catch up as fast, even in the Marvel brand, because it wouldn't be fair to the Marvel properties laid out so far ahead.
And when the Schneikes is Reed Richards going to show up in the Marvel universe? And how is that going to happen?
Cast on today's show. I'm so excited.
It is coming.
So we have all those movies. I'm really excited for
Black Panther.
We've got The New Mutants. Obviously, it looks like a horror movie. Infinity Wars this summer. Deadpool 2 is going to be hilarious.
Yes, I'm so excited for Deadpool 2.
I love Deadpool so much. He's my boy. Deadpool's my guy.
So Deadpool 2, do you think it will have any kind of backlash like we talked about before? It's like they already built what it is. You're not going to be as surprised by it.
No matter what, people are going to complain that it's either a rehashing or not as funny, but I think just like Guardians, it's going to be as good, but there's no way to reinvent the wheel.
It's going to be a beautiful Green Lantern
joke. I think they're going to do Deadpool 1 jokes. I think they're going to do,
I think the action's going to be sick. I think they're going to have some
I think we're going to see some more mutants in it. For Deadpool 2.
Right.
Yeah.
The backdoor pilot for the entire X-Men universe is now Deadpool 2 and X-Force.
I think the Thing is going to show up in it.
Oh.
I know there was at least a version where that was going
to
happen.
We need to do the fast forward
button
here.
DC TV, you guys in the future have Black Lightning.
Black Lightning.
Yes.
Oh my God, I am so excited for that
Crash
show.
Williams,
it looks so good.
Yeah.
That dopest.
Yeah.
Like, oh my God.
Yes.
It's like a real superhero family.
He's
like superhero. Like it's the real thing.
And the nicest group of actors I've ever
And the first season are always great.
Yep.
Before they run out of stories to tell, those first couple of seasons are always hot on fire. Also, Titans,
we've been seeing
these pictures.
And Krypton.
Hawk and Dove, we've seen freaking Robin.
Hawk and Dove doesn't look as dope as Robin looks. And Robin looks amazing.
And Robin looks incredible.
But they all look true to the comics,
and they
though.
Look so, like, we trust our audiences to believe in
comic
characters.
We're desperately running out of time. We're running into the end of the future.
The final of the future is Marvel's TV, which is second seasons of Iron Fist and Luke Cage, second season of Jessica Jones, a Cloak and Dagger show, Marvel Rising, their animated entire universe, and Daredevil season 3.
Also, we have Krypton on Sci-Fi.
Krypton
don't forget
sci-fi,
that.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
There's so much content.
I'm excited about.
That's going to be so good. So, been a bold Christmas special from Christmas past, Christmas present, Christmas future. Thank you so much. All comic fans should love all comic fans and all comic properties. Marvel and DC uniting under love. And thank you guys
so
for being
much
amazing.
Love.
We'll talk to you guys soon. Tweet us, like us, find us. Bye, Internet. It's been a pleasure.
From producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire Popcorn Talk Network, we would like to thank you for tuning in. For questions or comments, be sure to visit popcorntalk.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of the Popcorn Talk Network. The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of its owners or principals.